Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
If you've just joined us, do share your voice notes and questions and thoughts with us if you will. 063-688-0959. Keep your comments coming because we've been talking about a wide variety of subjects here on the show. Everything from the private equity environment. Of course, we spoke about Scooter's Pizza making a return to the South African market. Are you a fan? Will you go and taste their pizza? Or do you want to be a franchisee again? Let us know. 063-688-0959. But also, this is a message for all my marathon runners. Those who booked their flights, made their way down to the city of Cape Town, ready to and prepared to actually participate in the Sanlam Cape Town Marathon. Only to wake up to the news that it had been cancelled for the Sunday race due to strong winds that had raised a safety hazard for the athletes. Despite that, if you watch social media, many, many athletes were actually running and turned it into a coffee run and actively celebrating even their personal best runs in terms of numbers and performance, despite not actively participating in the race. Outside of that, though, when an event of this particular nature is cancelled, what does this mean from an insurance point of view? In other words, how best do we cover the risk of having an insurance being of an event being cancelled? To tell us more, we're joined by the product head for events at I2 Special Risks, Mamoeti Nosi, who joins us on the show this evening. Mamoeti, saying thank you so much and welcome to Kaya Biz.
Good evening, Guguletu. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Excited to speak to you tonight.
Likewise.
I must say, as I reflect on the social media post from this past Sunday, there were a number of disappointed athletes and runners who had taken time off, booked their flights, booked their accommodation, gotten all their snacks and water ready, and of course, even the energizer shots that they took, only to wake up to the news that the event had actually been cancelled. And typically, for many of us, we sit and we think, oh, what a loss. But the truth is, the losses at a large scale could have been prevented. I'm quite keen to get your views on a missed opportunity here, perhaps to make sure that there was adequate coverage. But let's use this as a case study to make sure that we all learn from this environment. But in other words, is there a way to cover any risk of potential losses for cancellation of an event this nature?
There are many ways in which we could cover the losses for an event of this nature. And in the sense that we are a huge eventing nation, whether it be sporting or music, corporate conferences, all of those types of different exposures, at the end of the day, you just got to know what you are safeguarding your business for specifically. And the people that you're inviting to these events, I think, is also an important factor about this. Mm. One thing's for sure is that no event organizer really is setting out to have the event be canceled. Mm. Months and months and months of hard work are put into this, teams of people, so much investment. And ultimately, it wouldn't be an easy call before the race starts for you to say, actually, we're not going ahead. It really has to be the last possible resort because there's so much that has been put into making this event happen. So when the worst does happen, you really do need to have a risk management plan. And insurance is a key portion of that in the sense that when you are safeguarding your investment, when you're putting together an event of this nature, you're not just thinking about the current edition of the event, you're also thinking about the future of it. What happens next year and the year after if we have a blip this year? And so the insurance that we specifically cover at I2 Special Risks is a cover called Contingency Cancellation and Non-Appearance Cover. Mm-hmm. It's relevant for sporting and non-sporting events alike, but essentially it's a specialized form of insurance that's designed to protect event organizers from financial losses. These are situations due, like unforeseen circumstances that are beyond the event organizers' control. What happened on Sunday was specifically regarding adverse weather. Mm-hmm. So the storms, I mean, Cape Town is obviously notorious for intense weather systems. But there can be other factors, for example, civil unrest. We've had a lot of marches and protests of late, terrorist threats potentially, and even things like national mourning, if God forbid something would happen to our president. Mm-hmm. And the country had to stand still, that may affect your event moving forward. So all of those different potential things that could happen outside of your control and nothing that you could potentially plan for ultimately your insurance could safeguard you against that.
Got you. And as we know, insurance does play a critical role in terms of covering risk and a potential eventuality, just in case, and the what if scenario. What I'm quite keen to understand before we actually talk about the impact that it has on the event organizers and subsequent participants is how it actually works in the background. When I think about the underwriting process, sheesh, what does that entail? Without getting into too much of the technicalities, but give us a sense and understanding of the appetite for this kind of risk cover and underwriting. As we know, the markets and the environment in the insurance space has actually been rather tight, especially post-pandemic.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're wondering how your personal policies are underwritten while you're asking that. But ultimately, when we are underwriting an event specifically, we're thinking about what is it that we're trying to prevent the actual insured from experiencing. And in that sense, when we're underwriting a cancellation policy, we're looking at their budgets. So you've put all of this investment into it, whether it be from your revenue perspective, you know, you've got your sponsors, you've got your ticket sales. From your expenses point of view, you've got security, marketing, merchandise. There's so many different things that could potentially you have invested into this event. And we look at those two aspects and see what have you declared that potentially could be a loss for you should the worst happen. And we look at different things like the weather systems at the time. So Cape Town being a key aspect of severe weather conditions. What have the historical weather patterns looked like for Cape Town over this period of time? Right. I mean, years ago, the Cape Town cycle tour was actually cancelled due on account of severe weather as well. The race actually started, but the poor people had to push their bikes up the road because they couldn't get anywhere, and then it had to be called off. So we look at historical weather data. We look at how much you've put down in terms of your investment into the event, and we look at how many people are going to be attending, the location. There's so many different aspects to which we look at in terms of our underwriting criteria.
Got you. And I think that's important for us to actually understand, because it can seem a bit complex. And maybe that also then relates to how these premiums would essentially be paid. So how does it work in terms of industry? Event organizers who actually, you know, provide the necessary payment? Or do we also play a role as participants in these events through the payments for tickets and participation that we actually make?
I think the key thing about the scenario of over the weekend is that the marathons actually existed for 17 years, pretty close to what my age is now, just kidding. But
I love it.
This is not your first go around of putting this thing on. So you know that potentially things could go either which way, and they've had a good run, but it being Cape Town, you got to understand that it's not just thinking about what could happen. What's the worst thing that could happen this month? You got to think about what's the worst thing that could happen in any occasion. And so getting the insurance in time is specifically quite key. You don't just get it when you think that there's going to be poor weather. You get it across your planning period. So Wimbledon would be a great example of this. They've had a cancellation policy since 2003. Every single year, they paid for the insurance premium for this particular cancellation policy. And in 2020, they were one of the key large events that actually had a policy in place to safeguard from the fact that no events could happen due to COVID-19.
Yes.
Yes, you paid your insurance premium every single year and nothing happened, but you waited for the eventuality that potentially something could happen that was outside of your control, like the pandemic. No one could have predicted that.
Yeah.
And that's something that they need to risk manage for as an event organizer in this sense. It's just making sure that the insurance is in place long before the event actually happens.
Got you. And I'm keen to understand, in what kind of scenario would a force majeure play any kind of influence on the cover? And its sustainability. And I ask this because that's also what the pandemic taught us, right? That in
right.
certain extreme scenarios, and weather is one of those as well, where it's an act of God. And there's a dynamic to manage there in terms of the risk dynamics and potential payout. How would that be, I guess, managed, so risk majeure specifically as a term and a condition?
100%. We note these are sort of black swan events.
Yes.
No one can really predict. They have been happening sort of once a generation. And things that you've noted, but you don't expect to happen necessarily as a force majeure act of God.
Yes.
And in that sense, for example, now you'd be hard pressed to find insurance that'll cover COVID-19, right? Because it's happened. Everyone experienced the damage that, that resulted as a result of the pandemic. And for the most part, that will be excluded in a lot of the policies because we know that something like this could potentially come, on the horizon. But we look at it on a case by case basis. For example, in your policy wording, we'll have exclusions within it. So things like war or chemical attacks, financial causes, as an example, would be excluded. Mm-hmm. But in terms of unforeseen circumstances like black swan events, there's the point is that you have your insurance policy in place in time to safeguard against the fact that anything could happen that we potentially haven't planned for.
Got you. Perfect. And thank you for that. I kept on saying, for what? Risk measure? Force measure? We haven't used that phrase in so long, but thank you for the reminder on that one and how it works. Mamweti, thank you for this and reminding us. And I guess as a key takeaway, as you've mentioned, I understand I2 does cover special risk events, not only cyber awareness and cyber crime as a theme as well, but also, as you've mentioned, key events of this nature. Does the size or scale of the event matter? Because a lot of entrepreneurs might be within the space and fraternity and might just believe that the premiums would be too high and unaffordable. But does size, scale matter to the level of cover that you might be able to receive?
Sure. At I2 Special Risk specifically, we look at all scales of businesses from SMEs to larger corporates, and even events that Kaya FM hosts, you know, like the Kaya Family Day, things like that, really aren't too small for us because ultimately we're looking to protect event organizers' businesses.
Yeah.
And so a gathering of people could be Moses Mabhida, it could be F&B Stadium, like we had the Travis Scott concerts a couple of weeks ago, or it could be a corporate function that is more conference style and a webinar style. So we don't look specifically at the scale of the event, but really what are you trying to protect, number one, your attendees and your spectators for, and your investment that you've put as an event organizer.
Wait until I speak to you about insurance, my insuring my voice. Mamweti?
That is definitely gold. So you need to protect that at all costs.
Definitely. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the insight you've shared with us. And just a cool refresher on understanding that risk cover really can cover a wide array of events, scenarios, and themes that we typically don't associate it with, but does prove to be very relevant and important. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Likewise. That's Mamweti Nosi, the product head at four events at I2 Special Risks. Essentially, cancellation of big ticket events and items. If you consider what happened with the Cape Town Marathon this past weekend, it's an event that could have been covered. And a reminder as well that such risks can certainly be covered by certain insurance providers. Share your thoughts, 063-688-0959. Stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk all things mining with our favorite mining go-to guy, Peter Major. This time around, taking a look at the concerns that have been raised regarding the demise of South Africa's ferrochrome industry. It's just after 7:30.
Kaya Biz. Only on Kaya 959. On the street. On the air.
It's just after 7:30. You are listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. Now, for many of you who know that we focus on all themes mining, gold has taken a lot of our attention lately. If it's not gold, then it's largely diamonds. But there's another sector within the mining and industrial space that also needs to be supported in order to ensure that there's some level of sustainability, if at all, that can be reached there. But the South African ferrochrome industry, and ferrochrome is a critical mineral. It's actually used when it comes to the production of stainless steel, if you consider that it also speaks to that supply chain. So anything really to do with some form of support for infrastructure and metal development in the country. A number of these particular ferrochrome furnaces have been closed, if I'm not mistaken, upwards of 20. And for many of you who might actually travel around the Limpopo province and actually witness those large chimneys with the blue flames that would flicker at the top, that's essentially what's being shut down in terms of operations. To give us some context around what the reality is and the impact that we need to be concerned about, we're joined by Peter Major, mining analyst, who joins us on the show tonight to give us some insight. Peter, thank you so much for joining us today and reworking your clock to join us again on the show. It's not taken for granted. Welcome back to Kaya Biz.
Thanks a lot, Gugu. Anytime. Although the way you're speaking now, I think you could just keep going. You're covering this sector pretty well.
It's because I spend all this time with you, Peter, so I keep learning. But I'm hoping that my description and definition has been fair, just in terms of, you know, bringing ferrochrome closer to home in terms of the reality it has and impact it has on our lives. For stainless steel, it's used in infrastructure, in buildings. And, you know, am I correct in saying it's those flames that you typically see driving past a number of sites, though there's a word for it, the furnaces.
Well, you're giving away your age if you remember seeing those blue flames, because they've been pretty scarce for a long time. But yeah. If you're as old as me, yeah, then you really remember seeing all those blue flames, because I think at our pinnacle, we had over 70, maybe 80 ferrochrome furnaces. And I think we still have officially 60 to 70, but I don't think 15 of them are running now. Mm. And we've talked about similar problems in our mining sector. But this stands out because South Africa was a leviathan. We all know how potent and powerful we were. We got 80% of the world's known economic manganese deposits. We got 70-75% of the world's known chrome deposits. Yeah. 75% of the world's known PGM deposits. And we can go to fluorspar and other minerals. So we are a giant as far as mineral deposits, but we've turned ourselves into a pygmy as far as mining, and definitely as far as beneficiating those. And politicians confuse themselves. They don't know the difference between talking and doing. And doing is at the front of the dictionary, and talking is way at the back. Yeah. So they think if they keep talking beneficiation, we will beneficiate. But as they're talking, our beneficiation has gone down, down, down every year for 30 years.
Mm. And maybe let's talk about that, right? Not only has it gone down, but we just haven't capitalized on a time when we had the energy, we had the tools, and we had the necessary skills to make it happen. In the meantime, China has also taken us, taken over in terms of the production of ferrochromes. But add context to, you know, where we've just lost the plot and the opportunity to such an extent that companies like Glencore and many others have just decided to close down their smelters.
Yeah, we could say China's overtaken most of the world. You know, they overtook a lot of the Far East in clothing. They overtook America in manufacturing. They overtook us in beneficiation. So all of us have been dozy, but we in particular seem to have implemented policies the last 20 years that really assisted the Chinese in taking us over. We had a developed beneficiation sector on these minerals, you know, ferrochrome, ferromanganese, mm-hmm. second to none. And the whole world was getting ferrochrome from us. We were providing probably 65-70% of the world's ferrochrome. Now I don't think we're even 15%. And electricity is the big one. Yeah, that's 60% of your costs of making ferrochrome come from electricity. And I think the ferrochrome producers will tell you in the last 10 or 15 years, their electricity costs have gone up eightfold, ninefold. Mm. Well, it's a wonder we're producing any ferrochrome now. It's a wonder we're producing any ferromanganese. But we're now a pygmy in production. China, not only do they have electricity that is 33% less than ours, it's getting cheaper relative to us by the day. And it's not just cheap electricity, but every time you make another ton of ferrochrome or ferromanganese in China, you get a little better at it. Every time you build another furnace, you get a little better at it. So they have put such a gap in technology and their infrastructure. You know, we had world-class ports, world-class railroad. Yeah. Now we barely have a railroad. We barely have ports. And China's ports are so efficient, they don't argue with strikes and labor productivity because they don't have any labor. They have these giant, enormous ports. They're all automated. So we've lost it, unfortunately. We can't get that back. We've lost it on all fronts. Mm.
This is concerning because the consequences are going to be far wide and will be felt. Job losses, municipalities shutting down, industries closing, capital flight from several businesses, and just continuing to be unattractive as a market to other potential investors. Is it too soon to start counting the cost, Peter?
No, we should have been counting the cost 20 years ago. Yeah. Now, I should say it's never too late. It's never too late to do something, but to think we can ever get back anywhere where we were, it's a pipe dream. And to start telling your chrome producers, we're going to put tariffs on you to protect the feral chrome, I don't see that happening. It doesn't make any sense. Mm. And where's the money going to come from? What we can do, we can reverse some of the negative policy out there. We can quit trying to fund incentives on our own. We can try and lower the cost of electricity, maybe privatize some of ESCOM. We could, if government wants to support with a direct subsidy and help ease the burden, instead of having 2,500 layoffs next month or the rest of this year, they could delay the layoffs slowly through attrition over the next 2 years. Mm. But government has to learn there's this thing called the law of unintended consequences.
Yep.
And that means before you pass a law, before a bunch of you huddle in groupthink and tell yourself how smart you are, let's do this, let's try this. Don't experiment on people and industries. This is livelihood of the country. Think through your policies. Bounce your policies off people who know, off the people it's going to affect. And we've had too much policy just thrown out there, and then we find out all these negative unintended consequences, and then we know government never likes to reverse a bad decision, but they have done it a couple times.
That's true. And I think you raise a very important point, because looking at where we are now, there has been a meeting of the minds, many industry players, and even Joburg Indaba, which was held recently, where gold again took the spotlight. But are we seeing the necessary interventions come into play to resuscitate the ferrochrome industry?
No, I haven't seen much other than government has given tariffs. They claim up to 7 billion rand to try and support our ferro industry. I don't know how much of that's gone to ferrochrome. I don't know how much that's gone to ferromanganese. And I don't know how much of that's gone to ISCOR, if that 7 billion rand of subsidies, electricity subsidies. But just think, when we were the lowest cost electricity producer, government didn't have to worry about complicated tariffs and penalties and rebates. I don't know why this government wants to make their job difficult. I thought they liked being lazy. And if they didn't have all these goofy policies, the cheapest cost electricity, foreigners were investing here to beneficiate. So then we didn't have to use the PIC or the IDC to try and support industries that were uneconomic, that weren't going to have a rate of return. It's just reverse bad policies. Less policy is better. They don't even have to think, can we make a better policy? Just take off all the ones they've got.
Peter, this is why I love talking to you. Shoot straight from the hip and be clear. Thank you so much for your time. We'll leave it there for today. But always a pleasure speaking to you. And we look forward to touching base soon on the next few themes that are dominant and prominent in the mining fraternity.
Okay, Gugu. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Peter Major joining us as a mining analyst, helping us fully understand how a lack of clarity in terms of policy direction has led to the demise of the ferrochrome industry. And the truth is, we've scored a lot of own goals within this department, not adequately allocating capital, not providing the necessary support, and of course, ongoing load shedding. And now that it's stopped, there's minimal reprieve for the ferrochrome industry. So share your thoughts about this. Significant consequences if you consider the job losses directly and indirectly, the impact on the economic contribution to the economy, and of course, even just the closure of some of the business operations within those municipalities and key sectors of the economy. Yeah, those reforms we call for, we need to implement them speedily.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.